All right. Thank you, Lisa, for picking out the video. I'm looking at the lights here, and Lisa just told me that one of the lights here is supposed to be on all the time to highlight my hair, is blinking on and off, so I don't know. So I'm going to kind of move around. It gets a little distracting. This is what happens when, you know, you look at things, and you're trying to figure them out, and if I turn red, it's not, there we go, because I'm blushed. But we get, I always say that, you know, the early church did not have all these complications. I mean, they had persecutions and stuff like that, but nothing like we have. And so we're so glad that you're here today and everything. And thank you, ladies, for the wonderful music today. And it's such a blessing. We're going to have one more week of the series we're in, Stories. I'm going to probably share my favorite story in the Old Testament, the story of Joseph and the one principle, I think, that got him through his entire life. And I'll share that next week. And then on the fifth Sunday of the month, and we have the soup kitchen, which we always serve the soup kitchen in Enfield at Loaves and Fishes on the last, when we have a fifth Sunday, we're the crew. And trustees and I talked a while back, and we decided when we have a fifth Sunday, I want to highlight our missions and what we do and how we contribute, not only to local organizations, but also to missionaries around the world, because a lot of times folks don't know that when you give, a portion of what you give goes to missionaries in Europe, missionaries in Mexico, and other places. We support a ministry, a biker church in Massachusetts, and we just want you to know what we do and how we do these things. So coming up in a couple weeks on the fifth Sunday, I'll be talking about that. I'll probably give you a little outline of, you know, how much we've given to missions in the last 10 years and even to our local community, food shelves and local things like that. And Dawn and I last night were at a charity dinner, and we met with a number of organizations at the dinner that helped women who are pregnant and who basically need make a decision about life. And we were so blessed to talk to them. And would love to see us support things like that in our community. But that'll be on the fifth Sunday. Then on Mother's Day, I don't usually speak on Mother's Day. Ever since my mother passed away, it's always been a difficult day for me to speak. But I also, I've never been a mom. I frustrated my mom. I've watched Dawn as a mom, and I was a grandmother. But I've never been a mom. So we've always had one of our leading ladies here speak. And so Sarah will be speaking on Mother's Day. She's a great communicator. And she'll be speaking here on Sunday morning, Mother's Day. We'll have a gift for all the moms and a special gift for one unique mom that I'll be celebrating that day. So that's what's coming up. We're going to talk about stories today. And I named this one the story of grace. And grace is important because, especially as a Christian, characteristics mean something, you know, who we are. You can't live in this world long until you've been taken advantage of, you've been abused, you've been talked about, you've been rumored about, you've been hurt, you've been, you know, whatever it may be. And one of the characteristics of the Christian is how we respond. And we should respond with grace. In fact, if you think about it, the Bible tells us in the book of Acts, this is not in the outline or anything, that when we were yet enemies, Christ died for us. So he showed grace when we really were not worthy of grace, and that's what grace is. Grace is something that we get that is not earned, not merited, can't be kept because of anything we do. It's just God's grace. And because of his grace, we're commanded to show grace. And there are many stories in the scriptures that talk about showing grace. And I was going through a number of them this week before I decided on this one. And it's a story of David and Saul. And both these individuals were kings of Israel. And let me lay out the storyline before I get into the scriptures that we're going to read that kind of finalize the story I want to share. The nation of Israel, for the longest time, were operated simply by prophets and priests and that organization style there. And other nations were rising up around the world. And as they were rising up around the world, each one of these nations had kings. And they had that identifying human figure that led them, where Israel was always a nation to where they just prayed and God gave them answers to the prophets of God. And that's how they ministered and governed themselves for many, many years. And so they came to the prophets and they asked them to pray and ask God for a king. And God responds in the conversation as I'm narrating here was basically, you don't need a king, you have me. I'm your king. And that was the whole kind of principle there. And but they kept pursuing the fact that they wanted a human king, and so God said, fine, you want it this way. And here's a little thing about God. If you keep putting God in a box and pressuring God, he's finally going to say, if you want to go down that road, you go down the road, because of self-will, free will, you choose. And so they did, and they chose a king, and his name was Saul. And I elate Saul as being what I call the modern-day television-worthy politician, to where he was tall, he was handsome. I mean, they did what you normally do. You selected a person that had dominating features, and they chose Saul to be their king. And Saul was anointed to be their king by the prophet, because they chose him. Once again, God wasn't totally in favor of this, but God wanted to show them a lesson. And so King Saul began to reign and began to rule, and he began to do things. And at first, he did like a lot of folks do, that he inquired to God, what should I do? How should I lead? What should I say? But as time went on, he became very self-absorbed and began to debate with God about the direction, began to go different than what God wanted. And over a certain amount of time, he fell out of favor with God. And he began to make many mistakes. He began to be put his people in jeopardy, and they began to find themselves in situations where the enemies around their nation were winning battles and were defeating them, and they were becoming less and less of a nation because their leadership wasn't relying upon God. And there's a great principle there. Well, after a certain amount of time, God told the prophet Samuel that, listen, I am done with Saul. He is not doing it. That was the people's choice. I'm going to anoint a king that I want, and I'm going to anoint a king that's after my own heart. And so he sent the prophet out to different places to seek out the new king, who would not take over immediately. He would be the king in succession. He would be the king in waiting, but he would be known as the next king of God's choice. And so he went to the house of Jesse, and Jesse had a number of sons. And the prophet went there and said, I'd like to meet all your sons. When I get before the son that God has chosen, I know that God's going to tell me, we're going to anoint that person the king, the next king of Israel. So Jesse called all his boys together, and they got in a line from the oldest to the youngest, and there was only one missing, and I'll tell you that in a second. And he began to go down, and of course the older child, the older brother was the one who was considered probably the mark. I know my brother Dave loves that kind of, my older brother. I'm a middle child, so I've always been kind of in the middle of things, so. Went down the list of a number of sons, and when he got down to the youngest that was there, Samuel said that the king is not here. And he turns to Jesse and he says, do you have any more children? And of course, Jesse turns and says, yeah, I do, but really? It's David. He's the runt of the litter. He's a short guy. He's got red hair. He basically is an isolationist. He's not a public speaker. In fact, he's better with animals than he is with people. And the prophet says, well, where is he? He says, he's out taking care of the sheep. That's his job. And he has a harp, and he's out there singing to them. For goodness sake, you don't want a musician to be a king, okay? Really? And so he said, well, I want to meet this boy. So he goes out, and God told the prophet Samuel that this young man is a king, which is another little principle there. Never misjudge and never doubt what God can truly use. And so he chose Jesse. I mean, he chose David. And David's kind of like, okay, I'm not sure about this. After a certain while, we find that the older brothers went off to war. And while they're in war and they're fighting the Philistines, David stayed back. And it was common, by the way, that the youngest child would always stay. They always keep the designated survivor kind of thing away from war. If you think about it, in all the battles, in Joseph's days, and all they always kept the youngest one. And so he was back tending the flock, helping his father. And his father had not heard from what's going on in battle for a while. And so he decided to send David to the battle to check on his brothers and take some supplies for them. Now, the brothers in the nation of Israel were in battle against the Philistines, and there was the Israelites on one side of the hill, and there was the Philistines on the other side of the hill, and there was a valley between them, and the battle was going nowhere because they had this incredible warrior, this giant who was about 9 foot two, named Goliath. And every day Goliath would come down, and they would send him out. He'd stand all by himself, and he would ridicule, and he would yell at Israel, and he would mock them, saying, is there anyone amongst you that can take me on, you bunch of weaklings? Where's your God now? All those kind of things. And nobody from the nation of Israel, none of the warriors there had the courage to take him off, including Saul, who did not have the courage to do anything about it. They were intimidated. And Saul even said, if someone will take on this giant, I will make them wealthy. And no one bought into it because of how big this individual was. And you all know the story of David and Goliath. We use analogies. We talk about even business. You know, the big David and Goliath, you know, the Goliath store taking on the David hardware store. We use these analogies. We understand the concept. So young David, who's traveling now, he gets there and he brings the supplies to his brothers. And all of a sudden, the timing came where Goliath came out of his hut or whatever and begins to shout out. And David looked around and says, why isn't anybody doing anything? And, of course, his brother says, why don't you just be quiet? You don't know what you're talking about. And David got fire in his blood. He says, somebody needs to do something about it, and if you're not, I will. And that message got back to Saul. And Saul heard that there was a person that wanted to take on Goliath. And he says, who is this person? And he was hoping probably for a big, giant, bulky kind of guy, ready for, you know, WWE wrestling kind of guy, ready to go. And David shows up, and he probably sunk a little bit in his stomach. But he said, if somebody will offer, I will pay them. And he can't really turn now that you got an offer. So what are you supposed to do? So Saul says, tell you what, I'm going to allow you to wear my uniform. And, of course, he put it on, and it didn't fit. And David says, that's not for me. His brothers were ridiculing him, saying to him, you're embarrassing us because we haven't stepped up, and now you're stepping up, and you're the runt of our litter. And David says basically is that I am trusting God, not man. And David had one technique and one skill other than playing the harp. He knew how to ward off animals. And so he always had a slingshot with stones, and he was an expert when it came to using that equipment. And I'm sure there were times when wolves were coming to take the sheep that he would know exactly where to hit the wolf to make sure they could go no farther. And so David says, I don't need your armor. I don't need your uniform. I'll take care of myself. And David reaches down and he picks up three stones. He puts them in the bag and he goes out and the giant comes out and the giant looks at little David. And I don't know how big David was, but I probably about my size, you know, not too bad. Not a Danny DeVito size, okay? But he's out there, little red-headed boy with freckles. And, of course, the giant kept messing with him and says, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? And David had this attitude, I can do all things with God's help. And he took a stone and he put it in that sling and he wrapped it around and he let it go and it hit Goliath in the head and killed him instantly. This little kid. He got up, he grabbed the stones, he went up there and he took a sword and he, kind of gruesome here, cut off his head. I can imagine him holding this up like this. Kind of gruesome, but it's war, the enemies, and we're in war. We're in those things there, and I imagine he did that to. I love stories, by the way. If I made a movie about this, this is the scene would be. David holds up his head, and he looks at all his brothers, and he does one of these. Seriously, I would love that episode. And of course, he became the victor, and of course, he became the most popular person now in Israel. The anointed next king. Saul at first wanted to make him one of his own. He said, man, boy, come in here. You're going to live the finest life and stuff. And they went out to battle together, and Saul was so proud of his protege. He still was not listening to God, but he had David, and David was popular, so made me popular. But after a while, David became the focus of attention. And David became in a situation to where when they came back from war, the scriptures tells us is that the people would shout and sing, and the women would sing, is that Saul has killed his thousands, and David has killed his tens of thousands. And Saul began to get jealous. And Saul began to get intimidated. And Saul began to see the writing on the wall, that his time was ready to come to an end. And so during this time, Saul tried to kill David two or three times, one time throwing a javelin at him, trying to kill him. And he finally forced David to leave and go on the run. And as the story goes, and I'm going to move quickly here, is David now is being pursued by Saul, and Saul is seeking to kill him off because he's a threat to his kingdom, he's a threat to his throne, he's a threat to his identity, he's jealous, he's frustrated, he's embarrassed, and he wants David gone. And if David's gone, then I'm okay. And he pursues him all over the countryside. And David has a group of men because of his warriorism. He actually had a group of men that actually surrounded him. They became David's, you know, wonderful warriors, I'll name it that. And they travel with him. And they actually became somewhat where they would farm themselves out to help other nations fight battles. And that's how they lived. And then there comes this little situation. And this is where the grace comes in. One day, Saul was out with his guys, and they were pursuing, and they were in the vicinity where David was. And David and his merry man of warriors took refuge in a cave. And that's where they were resting and taking it of ease. And now we got Saul out there, and Saul says, and the scripture is going to tell us in a second here, Saul says, I have to go to the bathroom. And so he looks around for a porta potty. And he sees a cave, and he goes into this cave to use the bathroom. And while he's in the front part of the cave, probably, in the back, in the darkness, is David and all of his warriors. And a lot of them said, hey, David, here's your chance. You can take him out. You can do what he's been trying to do to you. And that's where we pick up the scriptures here. And let's read now in 1 Samuel chapter 24, verses 1 through 22, the whole chapter. After Saul returned from pursuing the Philistines, he was told, David is in the desert of En-Gedi. So Saul took 3,000 able young men from all of Israel and set out to look for David and his men, the crags of the wild goats, near the crags of the wild goats. He came to the sheep pens along the way. A cave was there, and Saul went to relieve himself. And David and his men were far back in the cave. The men said, this is the day the Lord spoke of when he said to you, I will give you your enemies into your hand and you for you to deal with as you wish. Think about this. That's what the other guys were saying. David, this is the day that you were told your enemies will be in your hand and you can do whatever you want. Then David crept up unnoticed and cut off a corner of Saul's robe. Afterwards, this is important. Afterwards, David was conscience-stricken for having cut off the corner of his robe. And he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord anointed, or lay my hand on him, and he is anointed the Lord. And what David was saying, whether you like it or not, guys, he's still king. And he's still anointed by God. And it's the old principle, don't touch God's anointed. And he goes on there and he says, in verse number 6, he said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do such a thing to my master, the Lord's anointed, and lay my hands on him, for he is the anointed of the Lord. And with these words, David sharply rebuked the men and did not allow them to attack Saul. And Saul left the cave and went his way. Then David went out of the cave and called out to Saul, my Lord the king. When Saul looked behind him, David bowed down and prostrated himself with his face to the ground. And he said to Saul, why do you listen when men say David is bent on harming you? This day you have seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered you into my hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not lay hands on my Lord because he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father looked at this place of your robe in my hand, and I cut off the corner of your robe, but did not kill you. See that there is nothing in my hand to indicate that I am guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I have not wronged you, but you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between you and me. And may that's powerful. May the Lord judge between you and me. When we make grace is about letting God take care of it. And may the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me, but my hand will not touch you. As the old saying goes, from evildoers come evil deeds, so my hand will not touch you. Against whom has the king of Israel come out? Who are you pursuing, a dead dog, a flea? May the Lord be our judge and decide between us. May he consider my cause and uphold it. May he vindicate me by delivering me from your hand. When David finished saying this, Saul asked him, "Is that your voice, David, my son?" And he wept aloud. "You are more righteous than I," he said. "You have treated me well, but I have treated you badly. You have just now told me about the good you did to me. The Lord delivered me into your hands, but you did not kill me. When a man finds his enemy, does he let him get away unharmed? May the Lord reward you well for the way you treated me today. I know that you will surely be king, and the kingdom of Israel will be established in your hands. Now swear to me by the Lord that you will not kill off my descendants and wipe out my name from the father's family." So David gave his oath to Saul, and then they returned home. But David and his men went up to the stronghold. A wonderful, wonderful story of grace. You know, human nature is when your enemy is attacking you, and we're not talking about verbal, that's what we deal with most of, verbal slams and that kind of stuff. But David had his enemy pursuing to kill him. But David was a man of principle. And David was a man after God's own heart, as is recorded in Scripture. That's how God refers to David, a man after my own heart. David had an opportunity. The influences around him told him to do one thing. You ever have people tell you it's okay to have revenge, payback, you deserve it? Don't always listen to them. David stuck with his own principles and his own core beliefs. And although he cut off the cloak, I think he wanted to do that to be able to show to others maybe that he had been in contact, but he did nothing. Don't know all the reasons for that. He didn't kill him, but then his convictions led him out to confront Saul. And he turned the individual's heart, and Saul never fully came around. That's another story. But at that point in time, David wanted to express, "I have shown you grace when you have shown me harm. And I didn't show you grace because you deserved it, because you were pursuing me. I showed you grace for one reason. You are God's anointed." And that tells me is that when I think about humanity, every person is God's creation. If there's only one reason to treat people with grace is because we don't get to pick on God's creation, and especially his family in the Christian faith. We're supposed to show grace because we have to remind ourselves, the person that you're dealing with the frustrations or maybe you're angry at, they're still God's children. And be very careful when you mess with somebody's kids. And even more, grandkids. I've learned in the last 14-some years is that I really like my grandkids better than my kids. I swear I do. And the longer I get to know my kids, the more I love my grandkids. Anyways, another story. But here's the thing, is he showed grace. And he went out and announced it. I think about this too, and I kind of always build visual pictures in my head, kind of where the storytelling comes from. We know the dialogue between David and Saul, but we don't know the reaction of everybody else. I would imagine everybody was with Saul was probably going, I think David just won over their hearts. I think their motivation and their energy level to chase after David went down quite a bit that day. I think the loyalty to David went up that day. For everybody in the room. In one opportunity time, David, ready, became the leader of Israel at that point in time in the hearts of men and women. Amen. Not because of what he did as a warrior, but because what he did as a grace giver. That's a story of grace. One other thing I want to share with you before I get into the final points here. Remember the part of the story that says, "I ask you, do no harm to my descendants." David, when Saul finally died, and it's pretty well accepted that Saul killed himself out of depression, when he finally died, David looked for family members, and he found one family member that was actually crippled, that when that family member got called to David's king's house, he thought, "He's bringing me in to pay back for my father." And David said, "No, I'm honoring my commitment to your father, and you're now going to sit at my table." Wow, grace. And that's why David had the hearts of the men and women of Israel. He made some mistakes later on, but he was always after God's own heart. But this one story shares the grace he gave. And that's why it's important for us to show grace, not because people that hurt us deserve it, not because the enemy out there, both human and spiritual, is not attacking, not because there's people that just don't like us. And trust me, the longer you live, and you that are older here, you know, as much as you do your best to get along with people, not everybody's going to like you, and you have to learn, what am I going to do about it? And there are times you want to slap back. There are times you really want to just say something. And I've made mistakes and said stuff to people, and I have. But here's the thing, is that I hope my life has portrayed grace. My wife and I can tell you stories of people that we felt hurt us in the last 20 years, 15, whatever it's been, 18, whatever it's been. And I can tell you, when I've seen them at an event on a town green or whatever, we've made a purpose to walk up to them. And you know what's funny? Time seems to get rid of all the animosity. And now we see them, it's always a heartfelt, hello, how you doing, talk or whatever. Some of them that did a great harm. But you know something? And I'll talk more about that next week, the whole principle about Joseph. It's all about grace. And you really have a better influence in the world when you show grace. Let me give you some of the morals of the stories I've done the last 2 weeks. First of all, life is full of crossroads. You either do right or wrong. And that's just key. Every day, every opportunity, and many of you are in environments of work that are hostile. Many of you are in situations, young people in school, that maybe not all the kids like each other and stuff. Every day is an opportunity to either do right or wrong when it comes to treatment of other people. Second of all, sometimes it's easy to feel we are justified with revenge. And humanly speaking, we may be. But in all reality, when it comes to as Christians, we're never justified in revenge. The vengeance of the Lord, let him take care of it. And by the way, I have learned this. God is a great neutralizer. And God can take care of his own children. And God can take care of you. And I've seen God vindicate people who just left it to God. Opportunity does not always mean it's right. I love folks say, well, Pastor, you know, I had the opportunity. I had, you know, the time that, you know, the stars were in line, you know, the clouds were there, it was a full moon, I was wearing red, I don't know. It's like, it was the right time. God gave me the opportunity to do something to settle this matter, and I did it. God gave me the opportunity to finally say something to that person and put them in their place. God gave me, some opportunities are to see how graceful you will be. And not every opportunity means it's an opportunity to say something. Opportunity does not always mean it's right. And the next one is, what we do influences others. And I really believe the men on both sides, Saul's guys and David's guys, I'd love to know what was going on in their mind. But I'm going to guess that David became the king to all of them in their hearts. And I think when people show us being graceful, and when people are mean and you're not, I think you win the hearts and minds of people. And by the way, that helps us influence people for spiritual reasons and God and all that. It's hard because I see myself sometimes really just want to pick at people. But I realize that I have probably one opportunity to do things right and show grace, even when I don't feel like showing grace. And the next one here is, before we get to the walk away, grace can change the hearts of our enemies. And I believe that point in time that Saul's energy for attacking David, his enthusiasm, although he still went after him, began to diminish. He didn't have the support system he used to. And I believe it began to change his heart because of grace. I think Saul knew that day, because he even says, you are the next anointed king. I think at that point in time, Saul knew, it's over. I lost. David won the hearts. So here's the walk away. Showing grace is the way we express the grace we've been shown. You know, in our lives, all of us have made mistakes. All of us have blown it. All of us have had things. I mean, you can't live too long without something, you know. It's impossible. Aren't you glad for the grace you've been shown? Doesn't it hurt you when you know that even Christians did not show you grace when you needed it? Sure it does. But the greatest example is God's grace. Romans 5 tells us that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. While we were enemies of God, he came to save. See, I'm sitting here today as a sinner saved by grace, and I didn't earn it one bit. And every day I have grace given to me, and I haven't earned it one bit. And every day I sin and make mistakes, and God still loves me and keeps me saved, and I haven't earned that one bit. You know what? That means if God can love us so much that he keeps grace and keeps us in his hands and keeps us united with him, even though we mess things up, that tells me that God's evaluation for his love and grace to us has nothing to do with our actions. It has to do with our placement. We are his children. So therefore, other children of God deserve me to treat them the way that their dad's treating them, with grace. And showing grace is the way we express the grace we've been shown.